Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And I am Jeff Jackson.
Jeff, greetings.
Hey, greetings to you.
You were traveling quite a bit again. I know that the last time we talked about the traveling you will do, but let's talk about the traveling you have done.
Yes, I was actually in a small church in southern Indiana last weekend. It's a church that we are about to serve some family from that church that's going over to serve in Europe. And the Lord blessed me with the opportunity to go back there to meet the pastor and the church leaders, and then to do the three-session seminar on how do you nurture your missionaries. They wanted to build a missionary nurture team, which actually is what the blog post that was up on our website today is about. And then what I did is I went back and I did the three-session seminar for them, got to know the people and kind of gave them an understanding of, you know, what missionaries experience and how to speak into their lives and encouragement and so forth. It was great. I was able to do that a few months ago at a church in Jackson, Mississippi, and I'm actually leaving next week for Reading, Pennsylvania to do the same training for a church that we're serving there.
That's very cool. I mean, that's quite an investment that a church does in all three of these instances are just one family going out from one church?
Correct. Yes. And, you know, because we're a facilitating organization and, you know, in our paradigm and our vision is we want to equip the church to send well. We don't want to be the ones that take care of their missionaries. They're their missionaries. And so
right. One
of the things we do is we offer this two different care structures we recommend that they build for their missionaries, one built by the missionary called a practical care team, the other one what we call a missionary nurture team, which is built by the church pastor or leaders. And then basically, if they're willing to do that, then we offer this seminar to them. And then I go out there and I train the people that the pastor and the leaders have selected to provide this sort of pastoral level care. We call it nurture rather than just missionary care.
So that's quite a service, man.
It is. It's a blessing that we're able to offer that to churches and that we've got, you know, the credibility and so forth. I mean, you know, again, I think personally, you know, having been there and done that, been sent from my home church directly, really cared for well, and then all these years, you know, helping churches to do that, I've kind of fine-tuned the things that people really, I think they need to know. And you can see the eyebrows raised and the light bulbs going off when I'm zeroing in on some of the issues about gauges, you know, that we have cultural gauges that, you know, we're born with here in our country and shaped by. And when those gauges aren't stimulated because you're in another country amidst another culture, this is how Americans respond. This is how what you need to understand and all those kind of things. So I love doing it. And I, you know, every time I've done it, I've probably done six of these in the last maybe year or so.
I got a question that's going to catch you off guard.
Okay.
And we talked about having the experience that you had.
Yes.
And, you know, both personally being in the field and then also being cared for well by your church. How many missionaries over the last 20 years do you think Shepherd Staff has served?
Oh, I would say a total, we probably served close to 500 total in the last 20 years.
That's what I was thinking. And that would be
currently we're about 220.
Okay.
Right now, or something like that. Yeah.
And you say 220, that's units, that's husbands and wives, yeah, or single people.
Yes, units. 220 units. Yeah, in 59, I think it's 59 countries.
Wow.
And they come from about 125 churches. So, you know, again, that's one of the differentiators between us and other organizations, where when we talk about what we do, we use the terminology of we serve 125 churches and 220 so of their missionaries. Because again, they're not our missionaries. They're the missionaries of their home church. So we're careful to make sure we use the right terminology.
That's quite a number of missionaries.
It is. We're kind of small enough and nimble enough that we can, you know, we can work with the humongous mega churches and we can work with smaller churches and churches that have never sent anybody and churches that have been sending for years but never done it direct. It's a real privilege, a real honor to do this.
And it's good experience too. I mean, it's real valuable experience.
And you know, I was thinking earlier today about I was putting some thoughts down on paper for a future blog post. And just the idea that, you know, even in the changing context that we live in today, you know, there's like a big emphasis on church planting, you know, here in America. And there's the house church movement that we talked about a few podcasts ago.
Right, right.
And so forth. Just the reality that God is continually birthing new local congregations in whatever form that they take. And you know, if he's really the one birthing them, at some point, he's going to call some of them to go to some other country to represent him and expand his kingdom. And so the privilege that he's given us to be able to engage the church in whatever form, at whatever size, and help them send is just something that, you know, I personally never take for granted, and neither do we at Shepherd Staff.
You know, that's a whole subtopic, you know, because all you read about on blogs and in popular Christian digital communication is how the church is in decline, how the world is unchurched, how much opposition we face. But man, it's just so true that there's always fresh movements, church planting movements, things being just popping up organically without a lot of hoopla happening.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is, you know, people try to measure the status or the condition of the church using, you know, metrics that are from the world, or using metrics that are from the past, or using metrics that are from a certain tradition. And God is not going to be limited that way, you know? So it can look, if you're, depending on which metrics you use, you can be really discouraged or you can be really encouraged.
And it seems like every generation has a segment of it saying, well, we're just not doing it the way it used to be done. And praise God, it's not being done the way it used to be done.
Yeah, it can be. It can be done because it doesn't work. And the culture's changed. Political landscape changes. You know, everything's changing except God himself.
The thing that's unchanging is that the gates of hell will not prevail against the Church of Jesus Christ, man.
And his body exists in a lot of different local forms. There's the church, big C, and then the small C church exists in who knows how many forms.
So much hope in just knowing that and realizing that that is the absolute unchangeable truth.
To me, you know, it inspires hope. And it not only inspires hope, but it also inspires like, hey, if he's actually doing these things and in so many new ways, then I get to have a role in that. Certainly he can use me if he can create church in any context and using almost any form, then certainly he should be able to use me. And I want to be part of that.
We just got to stay flexible. It's so hard to do is, you know, well,
it is.
You become old like us.
For sure.
I mean, old like you.
Yeah. Old like me. I am that person I used to complain about. When you get up, he kind of groans or sighs, and then he doesn't stand all the way up. He's got to kind of work the stiffness out. And I used to think, come on, why? I can't believe people actually do that. Well, guess what? Now that's me.
Yeah, I see myself in the mirror and I say, Dad, what are you doing here?
Exactly. Yeah. So,
well, okay. Well, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, you know, I was kind of provoked in my thought by some of what, you know, I experienced last week, you know, at that church in Southern Indiana, and seeing, you know, churches getting ready to send a family, but also some churches that have their folks coming back for furlough. And, and I was kind of thinking, you know, it might be good to talk about the importance of a furlough, but look at it not primarily from the angle of the missionary, but as far as, hey, what, you know, to the local church, look, you've sent members of your own body to serve somewhere around the world. And this is the time of year when a lot of missionaries are coming back for furlough because school is ending wherever they're at, or, you know, they're trying to stay on the school year if they're homeschoolers, the school year here in America.
Right.
And so in the next month or two, a lot of missionaries are going to come back for a break from the field. And I just thought, you know, it might be a good idea to talk about how important that is for them to come back and give the church some, and any church leaders that are listening or even missionaries that are listening, some understanding of the value of a furlough and what makes a good furlough a good furlough.
Do you go through that as part of the training that you did at these churches you were just discussing?
It's funny you bring that up. I do not. But now you've just planted a seed. because again, these churches that I'm working with, they're on the front end of just getting ready to send folks out. I do talk as part of the training. I do a basic thing on debriefing with them, and I talk about, you know, that being done either what we call a maintenance debrief, either doing it on, you know, over Skype while they're on the field, or on it when you're visiting them on the field, or when they're back on furlough. But I probably need to add in a component on why furloughs are so important and how to make sure that they're successful.
They need to be planning for that. Even as they're going to the field, they need to be budgeting for that.
Yes, they do. And in fact, when we begin to serve somebody, they go through the whole intake process. Part of the budget formula that we use to help them determine their budget includes a portion for, you know, a furlough fund, so that they're putting aside money each month, hopefully, into a furlough fund for their return back to the States, you know, for a break. And we also, of course, encourage the church to maybe contribute to their furlough fund or set aside money themselves. And a lot of churches will kick in extra money when over and above their monthly support, when their missionaries are ready to come back for a break.
Before we go too far,
yes,
I never knew what the word furlough was until I served in missions.
Right.
And when I first heard it, I thought, vacation? I mean, we got to raise money for the vacation, you know? So we really need to, define what a furlough is for a lot of folks, especially those that are, A, care about missions, but B, you know, have a strong sense of stewardship, you know?
Yes, yes.
Why furlough is important and deserves to be financed.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And so, you know, I mean, the word furlough, it's an old word that's seldom used anymore, but, you know, it comes sort of from the business realm, and even in particular within the military, where somebody is getting R&R, rest and relaxation from the front.
We called it leave.
Yeah, or leave or whatever. But the idea is that you're in the midst of doing some kind of work and you disconnect. You sort of take a leave of absence. And the purpose is to go back, to take a break from what you're doing, and to go back and sort of get refreshed, reoriented, and sort of reinvigorated to go back and continue the whatever it is that you were doing. And so you know, the missions world grabbed that existing word probably from the military and from the work world, and they viewed it as, you know, missionaries need to take a break from the field because of the stresses they're under and all the other things that go along with living in a culture and a country outside of your own. And they need to come back and take a break and get sort of re-equipped to go back. What's ended up happening, though, like you said, is a lot of people, when they hear the word, they think vacation.
Yeah.
And, well, wait a minute, that guy's taking a 6 months vacation. I wish I could have a vacation for six months. And so what's ended up happening in missions terminology, and you've noticed this, and I'm sure most of the people that are missions aware that are listening, now furloughs are called home assignment.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think I have heard that.
Yeah, home assignment. And the basic idea behind that is because a lot of missionaries are required by the agencies they serve to come back and not just to get a break and get refreshed, but they have to go around and see their supporters. They have to go to the agency headquarters. They got a bunch of stuff that they need to do. It's like, well, it's an assignment back home it includes some vacation, but it's also, there's work that needs to be done.
You know, it's funny you should say that. I was at a home group last night, night before last, and they handed out a packet from some missionaries that we support, Ethnos missionaries, and they're on furlough. They're living a few towns over, and they came and visited our church, and our church gives them a platform to address the crowd for a few minutes just because they show up.
Right.
And which I love.
Right.
And then I, of course, went and talked to them, and the guy used the word home assignment quite a bit.
Right.
He interchanged it quite a bit with furlough. And so, but I didn't realize that was, that was new terminology being fleshed out.
Right.
And the guy had been on a home assignment for close to a year now, was chomping at the bit to get back in the field.
Which is usually how it is, you know. And again, it's just, you know, we were talking earlier about how God's always doing something new and fresh, you know, with the church and the forms it takes. Well, in the same way, you know, within the realm of mission, sometimes we have to use new verbiage. We have to come up with new terminology to describe things that, you know, that we all know what they are, but we need new terminology that's going to be understood in the current vernacular.
Yep.
So yeah, it's home assignment, it's furlough, it's a break. The one word you have to be careful with, you never want to use, is vacation.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, just your average church member, even your average leader, if you say, yeah, you know, our missionaries come back from vacation for 3 months, immediately it puts it into a negative connotation.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, the church that I go to, they have a membership.
Uh-huh.
And so we have these big member meetings. The tribe of churches that I came out of prior to this, you know, pretty much everything was run by the pastors and the staff.
Right.
But in this church, it's got more of a congregational government. And so every decision is voted on by the members. And mm-hmm. one of the things that came up was sabbatical for the pastors.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that was on the first meeting. That was a brutal meeting.
Yes. Was the pastor wanting to take a sabbatical or?
No, I think what was happening is, one of the pastors floated the idea of needing a sabbatical.
Right.
And so this was the process they had to go through. And I think the other pastor, who's only been there 2 or 3 years, the lead guy, you know, probably supports the idea of building that into the structure of how church is done so that it can be done.
Right.
And so there was like massive support on one hand, but then there were these naysayers.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny. Some of the naysayers just wanted to be naysayers.
Right.
Because on one hand, they were saying, I don't get it, you know, exactly like you were saying.
Right.
And then on the other hand, the same guys would be like, oh, we need to do it biblically. There should be like it should be like the year of Jubilee. It should be every, and I'm like, man, Sabbath is every 7 days, bro, you know. Yeah. Sabbath is God's idea.
Yeah.
But that's something that, I mean, really, I say that lightly and didn't tongue in cheek, but Sabbath is God's idea.
It is God's idea, absolutely. And even the whole idea of, you know, even in the academic world, like when I first started hearing about sabbaticals, I've heard the term. I didn't really, I basically knew what it meant, but I didn't really know. So I did some research on it. And, you know, that comes from the world of academia. And it's got sort of a biblical anchor, because generally in academia, it's, you know, you take a year off after 7 years of being a professor or whatever. And so they give them a sabbatical every seventh year, and then they take time off, they rest, they relax, they do writing, they update their books that they've already written, you know. So for the world of academia, it's actually borrowing from the idea of a sabbatical, comes from a biblical concept of 1 and 7. I've helped a few churches over the past couple of years where they have, you know, the pastor has needed a break, he's needed a sabbatical. And I've been brought in to kind of explain to the congregation, you know, why the role and the stresses and the challenges that pastors face, the way we do church, are, you know, you need a break from it. You need more than a 2 week vacation or a 3 week vacation. The way we do church and the role and the weight that the normal pastor carries is incredibly burdensome, and there are unique challenges and stresses that demand unique opportunities to decompress.
Yeah, I think we need to unpack, just kind of float around that idea just for a little bit.
Oh, let's keep going.
And then bring the idea of, you know, the same stresses that are on pastors are also on missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that I think what happens in the church, Jeff, is a lot of times, especially on the Protestant side of the house, is that church planting and pastoring can be a very entrepreneurial kind of effort.
Yes, it
is. And so these guys are doing it, you know, beyond 40 hours a week. It's consumes their lives. And then they put expectation on their staff and volunteers to kind of do the same thing.
Yes.
And when you do that and then try and take a sabbatical, it's like, it's anathema.
Yes.
But those are the guys that crash.
They are the guys that crash. They're the guys that wear out. And, yeah, and either you know, they keep holding on, and you know, there's also a lot of other factors like insecurities, emotionally, and so forth, that they need to be in that pivotal role in the church to feed their ego or whatever. But anyway, what ends up happening is either they don't take a break, and then they hit the wall and crash and burn, or mm-hmm. they take a break for a certain length of time, but still manage to try to keep control of what's going on in their absence. Not very often does it where the guy actually disconnects, decompresses, gets refreshed and relaxed, and then steps back in because the church has been handled and led really well in his absence.
The idea of Sabbath was because God loves us.
Absolutely. It's a gift.
You know, it is a gift. You know, somebody that really, really treated that topic well was a guy, I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but a guy by the name of Mark Buchanan.
I've read his book. Great book.
Yeah. We'll link to that because that is I have another friend that just was sharing some thoughts with me from that book. You know, here's the downside of if a minister or a missionary implodes, man, the circle that the shrapnel flies out from
yes.
is way bigger than we think it is.
Yes. Yeah.
And so many people are hurt if that missionary or minister implodes in ministry, and it devastates lives. And so it's just so reasonable that God expects us to rest.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And for that reason, because the ripple effect of an exploded missionary or pastor, the enemy knows that,
mm-hmm.
and so he's working overtime to get that pastor or missionary to keep going and keep going and keep going and keep them running on fumes so that they do explode at some point. And there's a lot of good work that's done for the enemy when that happens. Yeah. And you know, you catapulted it sort of into the military realm. You know, you were in the Marine Corps, I was in the Army.
Yep.
And the idea of like, even, you know, like during Vietnam, a lot of the guys that I was in with were in, cause I went in like a year and a half after Vietnam ended. But, you know, during Vietnam, they had R&R. You know, they wouldn't leave those guys out there in the field. They'd bring them back. They'd send them to the Philippines. That the military recognizes that you've got to be pulled off the battlefield regularly.
Absolutely.
To refresh and recharge. They called it R&R, rest and relaxation or rest and recreation. I can't remember.
But and the thing is that one of the things that the military learned is that unrefreshed soldiers become more expensive to care for than soldiers that are refreshed.
And they make mistakes that could cost them or others their lives. You know? So again, a lot of lessons to be learned from the real world. And the church has been sometimes slow to learn those lessons from that even people without God can figure out.
Yep.
You know? So all of that sort of, you know, loops back around to there is great value in the home churches of missionaries holding their missionary accountable to take a break, to come back on furlough, to do a home assignment, you might say, depending on the terminology. And then the church, the key thing, you know, that I try to do in the role that God's given me within the ministry and dealing with the churches, not just the missionaries, but with their home churches, is for the home church to see their responsibility, not just in encouraging the missionary to come back, but making sure that when the missionary's back, using the resources of the body and so forth to try to make that time, especially in their own community, as restful and as, you know, refreshing as possible for their missionaries.
And nourishing.
Nourishing, absolutely. Yeah, providing opportunities, you know, for them to tell their story, you know, finding out, you know, like when we came back one time, you know, I actually we needed a vehicle to use while we were here because we'd sold everything. So, you know, our church was just great at caring for us. So my pastor put the word out, you know, somebody let us use their car the whole 12 weeks we were here. People, you know, took us out to dinner. They wanted to know what size our kids' clothes were, you know, the whole thing. I mean, it was our time in the States was a body endeavor. And it's so good when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good for everybody.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, you know, missionaries or people in the local church, you know, and even if they're missionaries that they don't have a personal relationship with, maybe the missionaries went to the field before they started going to the church, or it's a big church and they didn't know the people that went to the field at the time they went. The furlough provides this incredible opportunity for people that don't yet have a relationship with a missionary at any level to actually do that, you know, by serving them, by saying, hey, I've got a place for you to stay. I've got a vehicle for you to use. I got a connection with a doctor or a dentist. I got a buddy that works at Disneyland. You want to take your kids at Disneyland or down here in Aria at SeaWorld? You know, one of our missionaries was just blessed in that way. You know, one of our missionaries that we serve came into the San Diego area. He's not from here. I talked to a couple of people. Of course, I'm not his home church or anything, but he's in the area. I go to meet with him. I talk to a few people. You know, we get him passes for the zoo and for SeaWorld.
That's cool.
You know, and that kind of stuff. So there's great benefit. There's sort of a reciprocity when home churches encourage their missionaries to take furlough and to come back, then they reap the blessing of that. It's kind of the way God's wired things, that interdependency.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.